it.
Maybe coming back and not having anything. Let me say for the benefit of the record that I'm Bill Moy and I'm talking with Mr. Stan Brookshire in his office in Charlotte on the 18th of August 1975. Let me say that I appreciate your taking the time and allowing me to talk with you a bit. As far as your record, you were president of the chamber, I guess, maybe in 58 or 59?
I was president of the chamber in 1960.
And then ran for mayor in 61.
That's right.
And won four terms.
Four elections.
Now, you've been active in the dimensions for Charlotte-Mecklenburg since then?
Yes. Well, not since then. The dimensions for Charlotte-Mecklenburg was started a little over 2 years ago, and I served the first 2 years as chairman, and still hold a corporate office because Dimensions was incorporated as a nonprofit organization. Serving as president of the corporation, which I facetiously said to somebody meant only that I had to see that we lived within our budget. But Cliff Cameron, chairman of the board of First Union Corporation is presently the chairman.
It's an interesting connection. He was chairman of the campaign committee for the consolidation.
That's right. A very civic-minded, very able man. Too bad that effort failed because he took that to be something of a personal failure, I think.
Well, he had been involved in some of the planning before. Hadn't he been on one of the committees before?
I believe he was on the chamber committee that proposed the consolidation.
One question I have is why the attempt came up at that time. I seem to recall that it had been an idea which had sort of been around in the background, and there had been a chamber committee in maybe 63 or 64 which had done some studying of it. Then all of a sudden there in 68-69 sort of snowballed all of a sudden.
That's right, and I believe it was in 68, possibly 69, that the chamber program of work for the year had that as one of the projected programs. You could check that with the record, of course.
Was there a particular crisis? Seems that perhaps the water sewer between the city county might have had something to...
No, really, I don't think there was any such crisis. And I'll add that if there had been, it might have provided a better background for a successful effort.
You think that... One problem in getting the consolidation was that you didn't have some particular problem you could point to and say, this is really a crisis for us and we need to...
I would say that the absence of any crisis, any real problem, or any great dissatisfaction on the part of the citizens with local government, the absence of those things was largely responsible, or at least partly responsible, for the failure of it. And the second important factor that contributed to failure, in my opinion, was the fact that the Charter Commission, while it worked assiduously, worked hard, came up with a program that was just over-programmed. It was too much of a change, too much modernization, too different from what we had in the way of local government for people to buy.
That's
what it was. Not a plain merger, it was a reorganization.
They went very extensively into just about every area, as I recall.
That's right.
That's one thing I'm wondering about. It seems that one interpretation might be that the chamber started the idea, but once the Charter Commission actually got functioning, they went a good deal beyond perhaps what the chamber would have liked to have seen.
They went beyond the simple means of consolidation to develop a reorganized, modernized version of local government that was just too different from what we had.
How did that happen? Were they in some way operating sort of in a void and were just sort of seeking the perfect solution, the ideal solution?
To a considerable degree, yes. I think they were idealistic in their projections of the proposed new government. I think perhaps the broad representation we had on the Charter Commission gave a real active voice to a lot of people who had never had an opportunity to have a voice in decision making. Mm. And they just simply went, in my opinion, a little overboard in suggesting or proposing a broad form of representation. I believe we were to have, 15 or 16 members of the commission or council, governing council, as against a seven-man city council and a five-man county commission. And a lot of people thought that we didn't need a governing body of that size. There was objection in a lot of quarters to the districting plan.
Mm. Now, as I recall, you were involved in appointing members to the Charter Commission.
That's right. Charlie Lowe, who was at that time chairman of the County Board of Commissioners, and I made the appointments, and we selected the chairman for the Charter Commission.
Mr. Paul.
Right.
I wonder, why was it that you chose to go to this broadly representative commission? And it seems like on other occasions in time of seeking a program or to come up with a solution, the approach has been a smaller,
more cohesive
committee of businessmen or whatever, primarily.
Well, it was simply an effort to under democratic procedure to give various segments of the community a voice in the preparation of the charter. And it didn't work too well. I have to say that. And I'll also add, and you may or may not want to use this, that pure democracy seldom seems to work, not efficiently at least.
Well, that in a way is why I was asking that. It seems like the group who wanted consolidation might have realized, in other words, before appointing such a broad commission, that my appointing such a broad commission might open the door to getting beyond what they wanted into sort of an unworkable.
Well, I guess we just at the time weren't wise enough or smart enough to see that. I didn't anticipate it. But back to the point I just made, or the opinion I expressed, that pure democracy doesn't work. Now, I'll illustrate that during the hearings on the proposed goals for Charlotte-Mecklenburg last May, a year ago, in one of the meetings which I attended, there was one man got up and proposed that one of the goals provide for a referendum on city and county budgets. That before adopting a city budget, for example, the city council would have a citywide referendum to approve the proposed budget. That particular individual also wanted, then after the adoption of such a budget, wanted all expenditures of over $100, I believe he said, to be approved by referendum. Can you imagine
can have a hard time getting
the administration of city affairs would get stalled on the first referendum. But that would be pure democracy if everybody had a right to say how the city money was to be spent under given budgets.
Something of an unworkable situation.
That's right.
Who were the strong, were there individuals on the commission who were, you might say, stronger than others, more likely to get their views incorporated in or to lead the others perhaps around to their way of...
Well, I never attended any of the meetings. Well, I did too, because I testified before the commission, the Charter Commission, once or twice. But I don't believe I can answer that question specifically. I'm under the impression that when they were debating any given matter relating to the reorganized government, that after discussions they would take a vote, and the majority out of that commission carried, even a simple majority.
Do you reckon anybody had, you might say, special interests or access to grind, or were some of the sort of social implications involved in the number of districts and some of the,
yes,
the guarantee of fair?
I think that did have an important part. For example, I'm sure that our black citizens were much concerned about the districting to be sure that the weight of their total votes wouldn't be wasted, that some of the districts would be set up so that representatives from those districts most certainly would be black.
Yeah. And as I recall, the proposed charter pretty much guaranteed there would be at least three districts of representatives probably on the council from
black neighborhoods.
You think that that's part of the reason that the district representation became such a controversy during the...
Yes, I think that was primarily the reason. Then, of course, there's always the argument against district representation that we might be getting back to the old ward system, you know, where people, representatives elected from given districts, would swap out on a lot of issues. You vote for me on this, I'll vote for you on that.
That sort of argument, I wonder if the possibility that some of these slogans, like going back to the ward system or complaining so much perhaps about gerrymandered districts or things along this line, were sort of code words in a way involved with the school busing situation to sort of keep the agitation about black representation and black influence or whatever sort of alive in the community and take advantage perhaps of the emotions.
Well, I'm sure that played a part, yes. And the blacks at that time, and you can understand why, because with the progress that had been made in providing blacks with equal rights and opportunities as citizens, which is nothing but what we should have done, it was legal, it was moral to grant them their petitions in those regards, they began feeling they'd gained a lot of ground and they just wanted to make some more ground in this matter of representation in local government.
I'm wondering, were there arguments which perhaps the people who were supporting consolidation could have made? It seems that perhaps in a way the campaign for the charter was sort of what you might call an educational, civic sort of campaign, or it's not really a hard-hitting political, very practical campaign. Were there arguments that maybe could have been used to counter this in a better way, perhaps, than...
I don't know, and of course, looking backwards, it's probably easier to tell what we should have done than it was at that time to tell what we should do.
Monday morning quarterbacks.
Monday morning quarterbacking is a fairly easy job. But still, I think that perhaps the major reason the effort failed was that people were too well satisfied with the honest government, I'd say rather efficient local government we had. No complaints, serious complaints about the former city and county governments, and people didn't want to swap the known for the unknown.
Was this effort then at consolidation more or less just sort of a next step sort of thing? A number of things had been achieved, mergers of functions one way or another, and this just seemed to be sort of a logical next step.
I think that's right. I believe there was and there still is a feeling that any overlapping services ought to be resolved, and that either the county or the city ought to be given total responsibilities in those overlapping areas. And we have succeeded in consolidating a great many functions of local governments. And that may be the way we will eventually arrive at consolidation.
Well, just who was pushing, who was really behind? I know that the chamber had established a committee, and Dr. Martin was chairman of a committee, and Mr. Griffith was chairman of the committee. Who was really behind this push at consolidation? In the end, it seemed to be a very few people, in a way, when it came down to the vote, that were really behind. Who was, if there wasn't a crisis, and a lot of people seemed pretty well satisfied, who was really behind the push in the first place? And did they, to some extent, were they dissatisfied with what had resulted from the initiation?
Well, I would guess that largely was the officers and the board of the Chamber of Commerce that were who were primarily interested in consolidation. And even so, I know that there were some members of that political economic group who thought that the proposed charter was just too elaborate, too involved, and even some of them who gave lip service to it didn't care whether it passed or did or didn't pass.
I know that in December, just shortly before the vote, as a chamber committee came out, recommended a number of changes, especially in the representation feature.
Right. But I don't believe the Charter Commission gave any heed at all to those recommendations, as I remember.
I wonder sort of how that could be, and it seems like a good deal anyway of what has been accomplished in Charlotte, in which you played a real large part over the last 15 or so years. The chamber, in one way or another, has played a very major role in a lot of this.
It very definitely has given a lot of leadership to progressive measures in this community, for which it has received small thanks from a great many people. And I would account for that on the basis that the chamber, in the minds of most people, the average voter, is the establishment, or represents the establishment, and there's that bit of jealousy, antagonism, or you name it, just natural personal opposition in a lot of quarters to the establishment.
I wonder, since say a lot of the officers, whatnot, of the chamber had been so important, in some sense, how it happened that, this sort of got out of hand on them. Did other interests sort of divert their attention? Which while the commission was making all these changes, or at least recommending all these changes, seemed to be a loss of communication in a way between those who perhaps had been instrumental in making decisions and this group that was proposing some new.
Well, I guess it was just that the chamber officials, the board itself, and the officers just didn't back this thing as enthusiastically as they might have had if the proposal had been of a more modest nature, if it had been a more simple merger rather than a completely rebuilt structure. I think a lot of the proponents of consolidation actually lost interest and enthusiasm for it when it became too involved.
That seems to be, that's what I sort of see. I mean, it looks like the chamber initiated the idea and then the commission was established and got out of hand, and then a lot of those who had initiated the idea later sort of rejected the recommendation and the charter went down to defeat. Maybe these times are such that one looks for this sort of thing. I don't know. A lot of people look for conspiratorial sort of designs behind an awful lot.
I don't think it was that. No. And again, I come back to the placid attitude of citizens locally, satisfaction with local government. And if you study the consolidation efforts which succeeded in Nashville and Jacksonville, you'll find that they had some real problems that had the citizenry at large up in arms. Over in Nashville, for example, and they don't have the sort of liberal annexation state statutes that we have that would permit the city to take in suburbs as they were established. They were having a flight of wealthy people from the core city moving into suburbs, and they were county residents only, out of the city and out of beyond the reach of the tax collectors.
But they still wanted the streets and the sewers and the schools,
right,
and whatnot.
They still wanted Nashville to be a progressive growing city, and yet they weren't supporting it with their taxes. That was a big thing in that consolidation, I think, that enabled them to pass consolidation vote. In Jacksonville, Florida, they actually had a lot of corruption. Their school system had lost its rating as first-class schools. And, they just had such a bad local government situation that people were in effect saying, well, anything is better than what we've got.
As I recall, several of the city commissioners or whatever had been indicted by the grand jury.
They had. But here in Charlotte, there was none of that sort of thing, and people just weren't concerned with swapping local government for something else that was so involved. Maybe a lot of them did not fully understand it. Maybe a lot of them had their fears that were groundless as far as that's concerned, but they thought, well, we've got what has been good, sound, honest government. We're getting along okay. We haven't any particular problems. Why swap what we've got, what we know works, for something that may or may not work as well?
I remember from reading a bit on the Jacksonville consolidation, and one or two people here in Charlotte have commented too that perhaps a mistake that was made, seems that in Jacksonville they had organized pretty cohesively before the, forget what they call the Charter Commission, I believe it was a local government study commission, before they actually started work, you might say they had organized a good deal of support and had gotten the war chest up, as it were, for the campaign, and that was done differently here in Charlotte. I'm gonna, to an extent, wondering why a lot of people maybe see consolidation votes and these sorts of referenda as real political fights, and not things that people, you know, sit down and think about and say, well, this will give us better planning, and this will give us better services, and this sort of thing. Unless there's a crisis, it's a real organized political fight, and I'm just seeing that in Charlotte, maybe the organization came too late, or by the time the organization came, a lot of people were upset with what was being proposed. I'm wondering why, you know, in Charlotte, having some knowledge of the Jacksonville situation, wasn't done maybe closer, you might say, to the example that of Jacksonville.
I don't know. We had sent delegations, of course, both to Jacksonville and to Nashville to study their consolidation efforts and the results. And I think those who went to both cities were convinced that a single government was the ideal government for a county like Mecklenburg that had two-thirds of its population, three-fourths of its population, I guess, within the city limits. But let me tell you where some other opposition to it came also. The five small towns, incorporated towns in Mecklenburg, were not enthusiastic at all about consolidation. They thought they might lose their own identity, even though there was a provision that they could continue to operate as corporate cities. Then too, the rural voters in Mecklenburg County felt like they might be saddled with heavier taxes to support the larger government without getting the benefits that would be commensurate with the services rendered. And that in spite of the fact that there was a provision for tax districts, which in theory at least would levy taxes on the basis of services rendered in a given area of the city and county. In other words, the county residents would not have to pay for any services that they weren't getting, municipal type services.
So there was quite an urban services district and sort of a county services district, and the idea was you would be paying commensurate with
that's right.
services that you'd
But maybe that wasn't explained carefully enough, or wasn't sold at least.
One question that arises too, I guess, is since a lot of this, the vote anyway came up, and a lot of the discussion came up during some of the school busing uproar.
That had something to do with the psychology of the situation, no doubt.
I'm wondering, the question was at least proposed anyway to postpone the vote, postpone the referendum on consolidation, in hopes that the atmosphere and the agitation and all would improve or calm down or whatever, allow for a more reasoned.
Well, then too, and we spoke of this a little while ago, over the years, particularly in the last 15 years, we had been able to allocate services and taxes between city and county somewhat in proportion to services rendered. Take the public library, for example. That's the services of the library, and all of its branches are available to everybody in the county. And that expense has now been shifted to the county. So has health services. The delivery of health services now has been undertaken by the county. When I was in office, I guess for the first two, maybe three terms, the city was bearing all of the expense of the city hospitals.
Yeah.
Now the county has taken over that expense. The matter of city-county tax collection, the city has given the county the authority and under state statutes, the county makes all appraisals from time to time, evaluations, but they now do that for, and also collect the taxes for both city and county. So in those areas where in the past, county and city have split costs on a 50-50 basis, as they do in some areas, you find the city taxpayer paying in his city tax half of the cost. He's also paying in the county tax for the other half.
Double taxation.
The man out in the county is only paying once, the city taxpayer paying twice. So those are inequities that have got to be resolved one way or another. And of course, one way is to see that the consolidation was one of our first major consolidations. And that was accomplished on the basis that every child in the county ought to have equal facilities and quality of teaching. Before consolidation, the county school teachers were paid smaller salaries, and of course that means attracting largely less qualified teachers. The city was paying more salaries because we had a city supplement tax. That paid the increased salaries to city teachers, and there was a considerable difference in the quality of education offered in the city and in the county. Well, when the county took over and the supplement was made countywide, teachers were paid the same in the city and in the county, and facilities were updated in the county to equal those in the city, then you do have the ideal situation that every child, whether he lived within the city or out in the county, had an equal opportunity with the same kind of quality education. Now the county, there's a difference between the two types of government, of course, as you well know. The county government is an integral part of state government, charged with the operation of the courts, for example, the registry of deeds, the clerk of court, and those offices that serve citizens, whether they're in the city or out of the city. And such services ought to be paid for out of county-wide collected taxes. Whereas the maintenance of city streets, for example, certainly belongs to the taxpayers in Charlotte properly, even though county residents coming to town naturally do use those facilities. And the county residents get some protection, of course, from the city police department when they're within the city itself. It's real hard to delineate, to actually specify what services are available to citizens should be paid in what proportions by the city and by the county. Whether you've got a consolidated government or whether you've got the two local governments, it's still a big problem.
You think that, to some extent, the success of some of these mergers and cooperations and the desire perhaps for more, you think there'll be another attempt at consolidation?
Not in the foreseeable future. The failure, 71, when we had the referendum, that set back any efforts to consolidate for a long time.
And you feel mainly you might say the fatal flaw in that attempt was that the commission, the Charter Commission, just recommended so many wide-ranging, very, very thorough, almost a complete new form of government.
Recommended too much for the people to buy.
It seems you don't buy any sort of conspiracy. Idea has occurred that perhaps there were some people who realized that maybe the talk of consolidation was going to come up. So perhaps they would say, well, we'll let them try to get consolidation, probably figuring they're going to fail. And then, now we want those people out there in the suburbs, so annexation is really what we want. So we'll let them sort of try and fall on their face with consolidation. And then, you know, we'll sort of give some lip service to it. And then we'll hit those suburbs and those in the perimeter area with annexation.
I don't believe that's true. I think our annexations have come about since 1959 under the new state statute that allows the city, a city council, to annex any given area that has become urban in fact or in nature. And incidentally, that's one of the finest state statutes that you'll find anywhere in the 50 states, and has been pointed out as being the finest by both the U.S. Conference of Mayors and the National League of Cities.
Both of which organizations you've been involved in yourself.
Yes, I have.
All right. I thank you for...
You're very welcome. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Appreciate both the time, and again, like I say, I'm sorry and about last week, and I will transcribe this and send you a copy of it.
All right.
The book.
If I see any errors, the way I've stated some things, I'll...